Hello, welcome back to another episode of In the Money. I'm Constantine Vrondopoulou with Fidelity's Trading Strategy Desk. And with me, as always, Tony Zhang, Chief Strategist at Options Play. Tony, it's great to have you back. How are you doing?
Thank you so much, KV. You're doing really well. A lot to discuss in the markets this week.
Absolutely. On my last check, the S&P was trading just shy of 6,500. If we closed right around this area, it would be a brand new all-time high. The 10-year treasury yield, as we often quote it here at Fidelity, looking at TNX, is at 4.2% annualized. My good friend and colleague, Mr. Albert Marquez, this morning in the morning market briefing, that's hosted by the Trading Strategy Desk, enlightened me to the idea that back in his floor trader days in Chicago, they used to call this sort of price action gapping sideways. And I think that's a great way to describe what's been transpiring so far to the S&P 500 headline number, or really so far this week since Friday's close. I know that that's not everything that's happening, though. So I'm observing many moving parts under the hood. I'm sure that you are as well. I'm curious on what you're paying attention to, Tony. Let's start with your macro views.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, KV. What's interesting is that prior to Jackson Hole last week, investors were seemingly a little bit concerned around valuations overall. You have the S&P 500 trading north of 22 times forward earnings. You had the NASDAQ at 28, tw nearly 28 times forward earnings. And there was just definitely some murmurs around with regards to whether or not the hype around these major tech companies trading north of 35 times forward earnings is perhaps getting a little bit too stretched. And I think, heading into Jackson Hole, there was definitely some concern. We saw sentiment turn a little bit sour here, but that really turned around after Chairman Powell gave us a bit of a dovish pivot to his speech, and suggesting that the Fed was likely going to start cutting rates here in September. At the moment, the market reaction was obviously very positive to that news, but actual expectations of rate cuts haven't really changed that much. We're still only expecting two rate cuts for this particular year. However, as I said, the markets did recover quite strongly from that sentiment being sour and going into, in the middle of last week, going into Jackson Hole. And what's really interesting is that we saw small caps outperform the S&P 500 by a wide margin on that move higher. And that makes sense to some degree. We basically have seen a little bit of a value catch up here. Small cap, large, small cap catching up to large cap, and value catching up to growth. And what's really interesting is that we're starting to see a lot of rotation here that we didn't see over the past few months. So you had some of the most crowded leaders within technology, within discretionary communications, turn into laggards where, as opposed to energy and material, started to outperform. Really interesting to note is that regional banks, one of the best performing industries right now, up 6% on just the last week alone. And this is really regards to, an expectation of the Fed embarking on the next leg lower with regards to interest rates. So market breadth continues to improve, which is largely constructive for the sustainability of this rally, especially if you consider the rotation that we're starting to see here in the broader markets. You have small caps outperforming while the technology underperformed. And you see the VIX back below 15% again. We're now pushing, to 52-week lows again. We're at 14.2 on the VIX. 10-year yields below 4 or 4.25%. This is all supportive of equities to continue the equity rally that we're in. So we still have not really seen much of a pullback or consolidation here. We're really just continuing to push higher here. And Nvidia was going to be the big potential disruptor to this rally here. And as of today, Nvidia largely met expectations with regards to growth. We did see a substantial growth relative to the same time last year, but that growth is starting to slow down a little bit. But that seemed to not that market seemed to have accepted that and is not being overly concerned with regards to valuations from technology at this moment. And GDP came out stronger than expected here today. That's all providing kind of further support here for the markets. And I think, you know, the big thing that we still have on the radar are job numbers next week. And I think that's one that I think we really have to pay attention to, because that could potentially change the calculus with regards to how many rate cuts we see here for the end of the year. You know, it was that last poor labor report that really shifted expectations, you know, to three rate cuts, that now is being tapered back a little bit. But I think if we see another poor reading on labor, that's really what could continue to drive lower interest rates. And that at the moment is what markets are, you know, market sentiment is being driven off of.
Yeah, Tony, all eyes are obviously going to be on the upcoming macro data for sure. We have the PCE numbers tomorrow. That's also going to be very interesting. Reminder that not only that we're going to get the Federal Open Market Committee decision on rate cuts on September 17th, we're also going to get the quarterly SEP update. So that's going to reflect what the committee sees in terms of rate cuts going forward. So certainly plenty to look forward to in the next couple of weeks. Tony, something that you're noting, I think, is very important, the relative strength comparison of small caps relative to S&Ps and relative to the NASDAQ 100. The result is that the small caps are outperforming both at the moment. You mentioned that lower yields are very likely, to a certain degree, a culprit to the small cap outperformance. I'm wondering if you're seeing this trend continue. It has been the trend for the last couple of weeks, so it's not just a couple of days. Do you see that going forward into the second half?
You know, we are certainly, that's a great question. We're certainly entering an environment where that trend can continue, you know, especially with lower interest rates. And as I was saying before, if we see labor markets weaken further, that is, you know, what could change the calculus with regards to further rate cuts or more rate cuts than the market is currently implying at the moment. And that is one of the things that could drive small caps to continue to outperform large caps here. But historically speaking, you know, that trend, you know, we have seen pockets of time where small caps outperform growth and large cap, but that largely has not had staying power. So statistically speaking, I don't particularly think that that is likely going to happen. But, you know, if we do see some further rate cuts or further dovish pivots here to the Fed, that could be a potential catalyst where that does continue.
Yes, keeping your hands tight to your vest, that's very important, right? Don't get overzealous. Make sure that you're managing risk. It's been a great outperforming trade, but make sure that you're tightening up your stops on the way higher there. Tony, let's reveal your options trade idea. Kind of given that backdrop, what are you looking at?
Yeah, exactly. So given this backdrop where we have seen some of the sectors that have been most out of favor, if you will, and trading at some of the lowest valuations we've seen historically outperform in this market condition, I want to take a look at Gilead, which is a drug manufacturer, as a potential opportunity in this market right now, because we've seen a bit of rotation here into healthcare, into some of the drug manufacturers. And Gilead recently just broke out to a new 52-week high above a $120 level, which is actually the all-time high that we saw back nearly 10 years ago. And what's interesting is that we've seen this breakout here above this 120 to that new 52-week high. And recently, it's pulled back a little bit to that trend line support around 112. And I think that's really where the attractive risk-reward entry here for bullish exposure for this particular stock to potentially break out to new all-time highs. Because if it does break out above 120, we're talking about a 10-year double top that could potentially target significant upside beyond 120. And I think this is an opportunity for investors to perhaps get in early before that big breakout could happen and using options. Now, if you look at the business here, you know, Gilead trades at a very reasonable valuation, I think at 14 times forward earnings, which is a slight premium to the industry, which is trading currently around 12 times forward earnings. But when you look at top and bottom line growth expectations, this is really where Gilead exceeds the industry by a pretty wide margin. And more importantly, net margins of 20%. 22% are head and shoulders above the industry. And not to mention, they generate a substantial amount of free cash flow. Free cash flow margin stands, you know, north of 32%. So I think for a company like this, that's incredibly efficient at turning revenue into profits, you know, trading at 14 times earnings as it reaches back to those 52 week highs and all time highs, you know, this is the type of the fundamentals that I like to see, especially as it outperforms the industry, you know, that I like to look for a potential breakout above those all-time highs. And then if you just look at kind of what they've been doing recently, you know, they've really made some gains within the HIV franchise. You know, their drugs that they currently have on hand for HIV continues to expand. They recently just got approval in the EU for their twice yearly shot. You know, there's a lot of things that they're doing in that particular front. And they're also on the oncology front as well. And that's actually where I think a lot of the top line growth can potentially come from, is their drug pipeline within oncology. So when you factor into the technicals that we're currently seeing, the strength that we're seeing heading into that all-time high, you look at the fundamentals and you see the valuation, it looks incredibly attractive, especially when you consider the strong free cash flow and the fact that they pay a nearly 5% dividend yield. You know, this is really the type of stock that's returning a lot of value to shareholders. You know, going into that all-time high, I think there's a high probability that you could see a breakout here and continue on to perhaps even 150, 160 to the upside, because that double top here, we're talking about a 10-year double top that would target, you know, in that 160 range to the upside. So there's a lot of upside potential here. And I think this is an early way to test the waters and see if we do get that breakout. So I'm going out to the October 17th monthly expiration, and I'm looking at buying a simple call spread. I'm looking at buying the 110, 120 call spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $4.50 for that debit spread. And what that means is that you're risking $450 if Gilead is below $110 at expiration. Now, if it gets below 110, that basically means that the bullish trend line that we see here on the stock has been broken, and meaning the timing on this particular stock for that breakout to those all-time highs is probably not the right timing. But my upside here is that I can make a $550 per contract if the stock is above $120 at expiration. And if it does break out above $120 at expiration, that's really where I think we can adjust this winner into potentially hitting a big home run to the upside. But this is really where I'm testing the waters here with a small position in Gilead, looking to see if it does hold this trend line and get back into that 120 all-time high level and potentially see that breakout.
Yeah, Tony, great analysis there. A couple of thoughts on Gilead. Reminder that the most recent breakout to those effectively of a decade high was post its own earnings announcement, which was a double beat. And we faded a lot of that price action to the downside here. So from the options trading perspective, implied volatilities in longer duration options have come down post the earnings event. And the price action, of course, has reversed lower towards that connection of higher lows along the way, that trend line that Tony had on his chart. So very, very interesting, you know, from the options standpoint of view of how you could be taking advantage of the potential upside breakout, utilizing capital efficiency of options while they're a lot cheaper than they were, let's say, a couple of weeks ago. The second thing I want to mention is the fact that Gilead's options markets are slightly less efficient than the vast majority of you are probably used to. We're used to looking at recognizable high-flying names that have very tight bid offer spreads. Gilead is a tradable market, but it has slightly less efficient dynamics. And so what that means is I would encourage all of our traders in the audience to utilize limit orders when executing your trades. Put in the trade, try to sort of bargain with the marketplace, see what you are willing to pay. And then if the marketplace does not fill you, you can, of course, walk that debit higher along the way if you're not in a hurry. Fidelity does pride itself on amazing order execution quality, but I would encourage everyone to stay vigilant in this one. Tony, we have a look back at a trade that was not a massive success right out of the gate when you and I talked about it just about a month ago or so, but turned out to be a huge winner. So let's take a look at it.
Yeah, like you said, a month ago, what I laid out was a bullish thesis here. Alphabet was trading around 192 at the time, and we looked at buying the September 190 210 call vertical, basically targeting, similar to Gilead, the all-time highs. And we paid $7.70 for that debit spread. And now the stock has just broke out above that 210 level. We're trading at 212 at the moment. And that debit spread that we paid $7.70 for is now trading at around $14.65, which is equates to about a 90% gain on the investment. And whenever we exceed the upper strike of a debit spread, that's when we start looking at adjusting these trades. And from my perspective, now that we've broken out to new all-time highs, this opens up a further upside potential here for Alphabet, especially given the fact that out of the Mag 7, it is by far the cheapest from a valuation perspective, trading still at 20 times forward earnings relative to if you look at Microsoft or Nvidia trading, you know, 30, 35, 40 times forward earnings. Alphabet, I think, is actually one of the most undervalued tech names in this particular space. So if you're looking for opportunities within tech from an AI perspective, this is probably the cheapest way to get exposure, in my opinion. So I think what I'm going to do here is to close out the debit spread that we bought that expires in September, and then look at rolling it to an October 210, 230 call spread, basically looking for further upside now that we have the breakout here. Earlier today, you can pay about $6.90 for that debit spread. And what this means is that if you can roll the profits from the previous trade into this new trade, the economics change substantially. You know, usually with these types of debit spreads, you have about a 2-to-1 risk to reward ratio. For every $1 you risk, you can potentially make two. But because we rolled the profits from the first one into the second trade, now the maximum loss that I can have in this particular trade is actually a $5 gain per contract. So basically no risk on this particular trade. And if this trade does reach that 230 level by that October expiration, my maximum gain is around $2,000 per contract. So this is really kind of a good example of how you can take a trade that works in your favor and try to hit home runs on the back end of it, especially if the thesis that you originally had played out to be correct, and now you have the potential for further upside.
Yeah, Tony, the initial spread was 20 points wide, 190 long, 210 short for $7.70. That was less than one half of the width of the strikes. You know, as I mentioned, we talked about this particular trade on the day after Alphabet reported earnings. So implied volatility was coming down already. And for about a week, week and a half, the stock kind of chopped around sideways to maybe going a little bit lower by about 2-2.5%. So clearly, if you would have put that trade on right away on the 24th, it would have probably taken some heat. So the question that I have for you, Tony, is how important is it for you to define your, you know, willingness to lose? How do you define that when you are structuring the trade? Are you thinking about the net debit outlay as your maximum potential loss, even if the strategy or if the underlying ends up going lower, or do you manage it in this to a certain degree? I mean, like I said, sometimes you're not right away, but defining your risk reward from the onset and using capital efficiency allows you to maybe stick around in something for a lot longer, which in this case ended up paying dividends and then some.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic question. And this is a question that I think every investor needs to think through. And, you know, as far as your question with regards to how do you plan for a trade, how do you think through, you know, the different scenarios and what you do, you know, this is what I call emotional resiliency that you need to build as a trader. Because when you put on a trade, you very well have a plan in mind in terms of where you might want to take profits, where you might want to cut losses. But a lot of times when you actually see the P&L tick in your account, we kind of sometimes throw that plan out the window. And then we have to build the emotional resiliency to be able to stick to our trading plan. And I can't tell you enough how hard that is to actually do, but arguably is the most important thing that successful traders do that that differentiates them from everyone else. So putting on a plan, so, you know, and I always say the simpler your plan is, the easier it is to follow. So from a debit spread like this, the rule of thumb that I generally have is that if I lose 50% of the premium that I've paid, then I cut my losses. And usually that's where I set a stop loss order, or there's no emotional decision that I have to make. Either it hits that threshold and it gets filled, or it doesn't hit that threshold and I continue to hold on to that trade. And if the trade goes in my favor, that's really where I have a lot of choice as far as what I can do. I can simply take profits and move on. I can take profits and roll this position like I'm doing right now. I can roll this position and add even more size if I really think the opportunity has now initiated. So there's a lot of things that you can do when the trade goes in your favor, but when the trade goes against you, there's really only one thing you can do, and it should be a hard and fast rule as far as when you cut your losses. And I always find that putting a stop loss removes the emotional decision making that you have to do and makes it just black and white and easy to follow, and you have a higher chance of actually following through with your original trading plan rather than, you know, potentially holding on to a loss longer than you should.
Excellent, Tony. Great lessons in there, and we continue to learn from you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom each and every week with all of our viewers here. This brings us to a close, Tony. I want to thank our viewers for tuning in. Quick reminder, as flagged last week, I want to take a moment and remind our viewers that for an upcoming, we're having an upcoming shift to our viewing model here starting next week. You can tune in to the In the Money by registering for upcoming episodes on Fidelity In the Money viewing page. There should be a link in the corner of your viewing window right now. I think it's fidelityevents.com/In the Money. We certainly would like to see you back here again. We appreciate your flexibility as we implement these new viewing experience changes. Of course, as always, don't forget the Trading Strategy Desk is putting on the follow-up session to this particular show. You could register for that by going to fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. I personally will be in that 1:30 Eastern Standard Time session tomorrow, breaking down the additional details about everything that we've discussed here today. Tony, we also have the investor newsletter that comes out and updates very frequently and often, fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly. So all sorts of things happening here on Fidelity's side. Tony, thank you so much for coming back every single week and providing us with new and very challenging at times, brain challenging trade idea structures. Thank you.
Thank you so much, KV.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.